Yosef HaTzadik was supposed to be saved by Reuben. There's no question about that. The Pasuk praised him for it, and it seems he had really noble intentions. I mean, he really intended, without any question, to be able to save Yosef HaTzadik. It seems that it's written that way, and it seems that's 100% true. The problem is what the Shvatim were thinking. It's clear they wanted to kill Yosef, so why would throwing him in a pit make it any better? That makes no sense. If you want to kill him, kill him. If you think that he's Chayiv Nisa, for whatever reason, if you feel that he's a Navi Sheker, and he's a Navi Sheker for saying out those dreams, and because of the Baal Lashon Hara, the Yerushalmi and Shulis and Perichat says that somebody who's a Baal Lashon Hara can't get a Nevuah, and if you hold that Yosef HaTzadik is a Baal Lashon Hara, and he spoke Lashon Hara about you, and then you hold that he, since the Baal Lashon Hara can't get Nevuah, so therefore he's Chayiv Nisa, so kill him. Just kill him. You don't have to do anything else. Why in the world would Reuben saying, let's just throw him in a pit, be any better to them? Why would that make any sense? That shouldn't help whatsoever. So the concept is that Reuben argued with them and said, no Beis Din kills themselves. They make Shluchei Beis Din go instead. There's Shluchei Beis Din that do the killing instead of the Beis Din itself. If that's true, then no one here can kill Yosef HaTzadik. So let's send him into a pit. Let him die of starvation, through snakes and scorpions, through water. Kill him in some which way for which we are not involved in it. If we kill him that way, we kill him through grumma, then we won't be chayav for what we did, even if we are. Even if we are wrong about our pesach din. So they paskin yidish should die, and they paskin yidish should die through this method so that it wouldn't be directly through them themselves. It's possible that they were trying to be mekayim the dreams. The Ramban says that everybody is trying to be mekayim dreams throughout the entire Chumash. Yosef HaTzadik is trying to be mekayim his dreams the entire time. So the Shvatim knew that they were supposed to bow down to Yosef HaTzadik, so it was brilliant. Said Reuven, you want to be able to bow down to Yosef HaTzadik? Take Yosef, throw him inside the pit, and look down at him. You just bow down in front of him. You are mekayim the dream, says the Chassam Sofer, by bowing down to Yosef HaTzadik when he's standing inside the pit, and that was able to get everything done. Said the Chassam Sofer, now you don't have to worry about anything. The dream was accomplished, and now we can take care of him, and that would have worked, if not for the fact that Yehuda got a little bit upset and wanted to sell him. If that didn't happen, then everything would have been a little bit different. That was that. There's a first Yonis in here as well. If you have a Rav Yonis Abshitz here in Yeshiva, I don't know, think they do. They might have, yeah, they do. Check out this first Yonis. He has another Sfar that goes through this, another idea that goes through this. Now, the Gemara Shabbos, we already know. Fine. How deep was this pit? So the Panini Kedem brings down from somebody random. I don't know. But either way, regardless, it's like every guy has that one time. So I guess this is it. So the Panini Kedem says that it was under 10 Tzvachim. Under 10 Tzvachim. Because otherwise, the hevel of a pit that was 10 Tzvachim should kill you. I'm not going to get into hevel. It's not. Okay, so now, the hevel should have killed them. So it had to be that it was under 10 Tzvachim. If the pit had water, then a pit that's under 10 Tzvachim with water in it has double the amount of hevel. So that would have been a problem. So it specifically says, Ein bo mayim, said the hevel wasn't going to be able to kill him, and it wasn't that. Now, the Maral Diskin says this as well, and he adds that it was probably less than 10 tzvachim. He says, because it makes sense that they would have thrown him into a regular boar, and a regular boar would have been under 10 tzvachim. A stam boar, says the Gra, is under 10 tzvachim. Here's the problem. 10 tzvachim comes up to this table. Chazanish is like up to over here. Okay? That's 10 tzvachim all together there. So they took Yosef HaTzadik and they put him inside this pit in which his waist up was he was standing out there. Unless Yosef HaTzadik is an ant, that's not going to help much. Because just sitting there and saying, oh, help, guys, I can't get out. What am I going to do? Somebody help me. Like, well, what does that mean? Why in the world would that have done anything? How can you even suggest such a thing? How can you suggest that he was in a less than 10 tzvachim pit? It doesn't make any sense at all unless they chained him down to the ground and literally put bricks on top of his body. There's no way that could be shot. And I saw that the Rosh says this. The Rosh, the Baal Tosfos, the Kvayt Son Mishnayis, you see it in the back of the Gemara, you see the Rosh on those Mishnayis. The Rosh says the exact same thing. He says, Stam Bor is always less than 10 Tzvachim, and therefore he's thrown into a boar that was less than 10 Tzvachim. And I saw the Moshe of Zakenim ask the question and says, how in the world could you let him be put in a 10 Tzvachim pit and not allow him to get up? How did that happen? He doesn't answer. Moshe Zakenim doesn't answer. My suggestion, I don't think I have a really good one. And I think Rabbi Hartman would punch me in the face if I said this over. My suggestion is that they did tie him down into the pit and would not go anywhere else. Now the snakes and scorpions, I would assume were inside holes inside the pit because it would be really hard not to see snakes and scorpions inside a pit that's only 10 fucking deep. Right? But nonetheless, it must be that they tied him down, held him down there, and he could not get out, could not climb out, and then eventually silked the Yishma'ilim, Midyanim, Midanim, whatever, Silkarim, whichever one it was, and they ended up putting them there. The Ramban, on the other hand, says that it was very, it had to be really deep, because otherwise they would have seen the snakes and scorpions, realized that Yosef HaTzadik was saved by a miracle, and then known that he was such a great tzaddik that everything happened to him. So the Ramban says that 100% had to be the way. Aside from that, there's a Gemara in Tumid, it's toward the end of the first parak, that says that Ashlacha is always to something which is very, very deep. In fact, he says it's 20 amos. Now, does anybody here know Gemara Shabbos? Because if you do, you're probably seeing the connection between this over here. The Ashlacha was to 20 amos. If that's true, then we now have an idea. How big was the pit? So the idea is, says the Chassam Sofer, that this pit was 12 pits deep. Because Yosef HaTzadik sinned against all of the Shlachim, apparently against himself as well, which is amazing. And it's 12 pits of 10 Tfachim each. 12 pits times 10 Tfachim. I know, you don't do math, but 12 times 10 is... Very good. Nah. So 120 Tfachim, if you deal with 6 Tfachim per Amma, that means you have 20 Amos. Says the Chassam Sofer, the pshat behind it is, and the reason why it's supposed to be this, is, by the way, he hints to it because it says Elabor HaZeh. Zeh is the gematria of 12, so it ended up being 12 pits altogether. They were one after the other, went all the way through. Reuven wanted him to get some type of a kapara. He knew that Yosef HaTzadik had sinned against the Shatim, whether he meant to or not, whether speaking Lashon Hara or not. By the way, he did have a svara. The Chafetz Chaim says that a Talmud is speaking to his Rebbe, he's allowed to speak Lashon Hara because he's Neman Alav Kibay Trey. If he's Neman Alav Kibay Trey, he's believed like any two people would be. So Yosef HaTzadik's svara was is that he definitely could. He could speak this Lashon Hara, believed by his father, and there wouldn't be any problems whatsoever. So that was his svara, to be able to get him to the place where he was in order to get him to the situation where he got to. The Shvatim didn't believe that he was Emanuel Kibay Trey. They didn't realize that Yosef HaTzadik was learning with his father all day long. The Baal HaTzurim says, Ki ben zikunim halo. Zikunim is a gemach, it's the Rashi Tevis of Zrayim Kachim Nashim Yeshuos Moed. Yeshuos because of the Gemara and Shabbos and the Vomit. But Yeshuos stands for Nezikin. He was learning with his father every night. That was the Ben Zakunin. I gave a shir to another yeshiva, I don't know what yeshiva it was in, regarding the Ksonis Pasim, which is a really, really cool idea. You notice in Birchas Kohanim, you know that Yehi Ratzon, where our school loves to say, like, stand but do not read? You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. So one of the shameless inside here is Pesamach Yudman. Okay, here's the deal. You're allowed to say those words because they're combinations of letters and they don't mean anything. It's not like you came up here, Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yod, Yod. It's not like that. What it really is just combinations of letters that are coming from Birchas Kohanim, which you're using gematrias in order to get to there. Pas Pasim is referring to the Ksonis Pasim. That's what it refers to over here. And it was a spiritual uplifting. It's an idea of what the yeshiva, all the learning that Yaakov Yino had received in Yeshiva Shem to Eber, what he had given over to Yosef. That was the Ksonis Pasim. And I know the Ksonis Pasim was also a technicolor dream coat, which was red and blue and orange and all those different colors. But it also was the idea of what the Ksonis Pasim stood for, was the idea of getting all that learning and giving it over to Yosef. It was the Ben Zakunim, Zroyim, Kachim, Nashim, Yeshua's Moed, to be able to give it over to him so that he would understand it and get it and everything would be good and he'd be able to learn. He was a quintessential Talmud Chacham. As a side note, by the way, this will go for a book. Does anybody know why he didn't learn Taurus with his father? It says Zroyim, Kachim, Nashim, Yeshua's Moed. There's no Taurus. So why not Taurus? There's three answers, so I'm okay with any of the three. You don't have it? Okay, there is a two-volume set of Baal HaTzurim, okay, that has notes on the bottom. Go check that out and come back to me. I might give you a book, but I probably won't. But look at the notes of the Baal HaTzurim. There's three answers. This is Spasamis, Chavisha Rin, and I forgot who the third one was from, but it wasn't as good. So either way, these are the ones that are out there, but I'll give you a challenge on that one. That was the 20 amos. 20 amos is too far for the eye to see. So the Ramban would understand that. If 20 amos is too far for the eye to see and the eye can't see down that low, if the pit was 20 amos deep, that means he couldn't see the snakes and scorpions that are on the bottom of the pit. So the Chassam Sofer saying that it was 12 pits of 10 tfachim each, which means 120 tfachim, which means 20 amos altogether, means he couldn't see what's on the bottom of the pit. If that's true, then Reuven specifically wanted to put him in the pit thinking there was nothing down there, not realizing it was 20 amos. Maybe that's why the Gemaras are put together. You have the first Gemara that says, Habor Rekim Bomani, Mashma Shema, etc., that there were snakes and scorpions in the pit. Right afterward it says, you can't put Hanukkah lift above 20 amos because your eye can't see it. Where do they learn that drusha from? Probably from the connection between the two. If you check out the Zera Baruch in the brand new Midrash Rabbahs, the Zera Baruch has an awesome board about how Hanukkah is Dioraisa based on these two smichos of parshios. They go together like that. Now, why didn't the Hevel kill him? If it was that deep, then Hevel should have killed him, right? Ben Ish Chai said it was a very wide pit. Of course, Ben Ishai says that. It was a very wide pit. So he was thrown in, and once he was thrown in, he didn't die because there was enough space for the Hevel to be there. Okay, we'll just say it like that. But that was the idea of why they specifically brought him into there and not anywhere else, because they specifically wanted to bring him inside there so that he wouldn't die from hell or hell. Okay, Rav Sternbach. Does everybody have Tam Vadas? Have you ever learned Tam Vadas before? I was just introduced to the Sefer, Tam Vadas. It's a 3-volume set. Nobody knows Rav Moshe Sternbach. It's an amazing Sefer. Amazing. It's all Kedushim. Crazy Sefer. And I don't know why. I don't know why I was just like, I saw it like in the Stokey Base Medrash and I looked up at it and I'm like, And then I looked at it and I'm like, oh, this is amazing. He's got crazy stuff in here. He says the word Vayesh L'Cheyu is weird. Why would you throw somebody into a 20-amma pit? You'll kill him. 20 amos is 30 feet, 40 feet according to the Chazon Ish. So you're going to kill him. You don't throw somebody down 30 feet. Why didn't he die? If you say that he lowered him down, but it says by Ashokhel, they threw him. So if they threw him into the pit, how did he not die by falling into a pit that was 20 amos deep? You know what he says? Crazy. I'm sorry? Yeah, go. What do you got?
Because he knew if he threw in the pit, then Hashem wanted to die, he'll die. But if he's not
going to
die, he'll
throw in the pit. If you throw somebody down 2 stories, he's not going to die?
No, that wasn't the point. The point was.
He's
going to die.
That's the idea. I hear you. You're not getting a book for that. But the idea behind it is good because we're going to use that for the snakes and scorpions part for later on to be able to say why he was specifically thrown in there. But can you imagine? You have 20, again, you have 30 feet. That's the third floor of this building. I don't know if Israel goes by 10 feet for every story. Maybe it's like 30. I don't know. But regardless, you're taking him off, and you're pushing him off, and you're like, let's see if you die. That's crazy. Of course he's going to die. Like, that's nutty. And anybody can do such a thing. So they threw Yosef and Tzadik in the pit, and they're like, well, let's see. Yosef's like, you're going to kill me. You are going to kill me. I am going to die. There is no chance I'm going to make it. But what Rav Sternbach says is, they prepared it beforehand. They took massive pillows, and they put it on the bottom of the pit, and then threw him inside. That is the greatest Kiddush I've ever heard in my life. I've never heard anything like that before. I'm sorry? If it's 10 Tzadikim, then it's much easier. But if it's 20 animals, how do you throw them in? How can you divide Shulcheyu? So they prepared it. They made sure that there were little pillows on the bottom. That's the greatest answer ever. The greatest. How did they not see there were snakes and scorpions and they put pillows down there? I don't care. That's a great answer. Either way, how do we know that there were snakes and scorpions in the pit? I have 5 answers to this question, but they're all dealing with different gematrias that go all the way through. The Baal HaTorim says it's a Gezeirah Shavah. It says Ein Bo Mayim over here. It says Ein Bo Mayim by Tzvarim Ches Tetzvah. So the problem is, I wrote this up last week. It was a big problem because I was speaking at a bar mitzvah and I totally forgot what Parsha was, because I had finished all of Parshas Vayeshev when it was still Parshas Vayishlach. So I got up to speak at the Bar Mitzvah and I said, this week's Parsha is Parshas, and I all of a sudden realized, I was like, oh. It was embarrassing. Anyway, it worked out. It worked out. I said, well, they're all connected to one another. Welcome to Practical Rabbinics 101. So that's the idea. It says, in Dvarim Chet Tetzvav Nachash Sarva Akri V'tzimaon Asher Ein Bo Mayim. Talking about the Midbar, it says Ein Bo Mayim over there. So Ein Bo Mayim over there, it says there were Nechashim and Srafim and Akravim. Therefore, over here, when it says Ein Bo Mayim, it's also referring to Nechashim and Akravim. That's the idea, the rush. And many of the Baalei Sof said the exact same answer, that when it says Ain and Rock. Rock, Ain, Bomai. The idea behind Rock and Ain, there's 2 mutants. Ain, Mira, Chamiyas, Elo, Larabos. Once you have Larabos, you're including something else. We're going to include snakes and scorpions. He also says the words Vayeshvu. The Yeshvu Le'echol, right afterward, that they sat down to go eat. The Yeshvu means Yeshvu Le'echol. There was something in there that could consume him. That was the idea behind it, and that's where they learned it out from. We find out the Rabbeinu Ephraim. Gotta love the Rabbeinu Ephraim. Rabbeinu Ephraim, this paper came out not so long ago. Rav Chaim Kanievsky has notes on the bottom. I don't believe they're really from Rav Chaim Kanievsky, because I don't think Rav Chaim Kanievsky really got involved with this paper as much as they say that he did. It's a crazy safer. Crazy safer. And if you've done parts of it, you got some parts of it, you know what I'm talking about. It says, Rock Ein Bo Mayim, says the Rabbeinu Ephraim. Rock Ein Bo Mayim is the gematria of 783, which is Zehu Aval Nechashim Yeshbo. Pretty good, right? That's a great gematria. The problem is it's off by 10. But other than that, it's really, really good. It's like an awesome gematria that goes all the way through. Unless I'm wrong, I'm not wrong, though. The Baalei Tosfos and the Chidah both say that Ein Bo Mayim, this is the best one. And I think that this is the real answer when it comes to everything. When we're looking at Drushim, the truth is, when you're looking at a Drush, you're always trying to find a remez in which the Medrash comes from the text itself. This is a pure Drush from the text. It's clear. Ein Bo Mayim. Ein Bo is the wording of Aval Yesh Bo Nechoshim Da. Akrabim. The Rashi Tevis, Aval, Yesh, Bo, Nechashim, Ve'akrabim, are the letters of Ein Bo. It's out of order a little bit. But that's exactly what those letters are. That, to me, makes the most sense. So I'm not going to say that I like them, the Chidah and Baalei Tosfos a little bit better, but I do happen to like that Chidah a lot better. The Sefer Yashar says that when Yosef HaTzadik was thrown into the pit, all the snakes and scorpions went into holes on the side of the pit. So really, they stayed there because they were scared of Yosef HaTzadik. There's another way of looking at it. The Sefer Chamin says, seemingly, the exact opposite. That the snakes and scorpions were not there originally, and they went there when Yosef HaTzadik was in the pit, and yet he was saved miraculously. It seems to say the exact opposite of the Sefer Yashar. If you, the Gur Aryeh talks about this as well, I'm not so sure what the Gur Aryeh is saying, but either way, that's the Gur Aryeh as well. It could be that you can learn it up from the word Ein Bo, as in iron bow. They should have checked that out a little bit further, and that's there. But Chaim Kanievsky says in Tami Dekra, such a remez that goes all the way through. He says, and I mentioned this before, Habora, the original thing of Ashlechiu saw Habora, when they threw him into the boar, the original boar was without a bow. But then it says, Habor Reik Ein Bo Mayim. Habor Reik, the boar, is written with a bow. So you have boar without a bow, you have boar with a bow. Boar with a bow means a completely empty pit. You have a pit that is a full pit. Boar without a bow means there's something else in there, it's not a full pit. Reuven suggested to throw him into a pit, a boar with a bow. He said, let's throw him into a boar with a bow, an empty pit. To which they threw him into a pit that didn't happen to be empty. Habora, in which there's missing a bow, because there were snakes and scorpions in there. But once he was thrown in, all the snakes and scorpions went into the holes on the side. So then, Habor Reik, the boar became empty. And that's why there's a bow there the third time. It's a great shot. Unbelievable shot that Rechaim says, and the idea behind it, that's why they're doing the boar. The Gemara Yevamos, Kukhov Alephim Aleph. You guys aren't doing Yevamos now, are you? Got it. So in Yevamos Kukhov Aleph, it says, it's just, oh, by the way, when I was here my first year, I learned Yevamos. I learned Yevamos in Rabbi Hartman's show. I was in Rabbi Hartman's show that year. He wasn't here. We had like, we were upstairs in like that three-floor weird base measures thing that's perpetually always under construction, but never actually being constructed. So I was there. We were there at the time. And I still remember him going through and trying to go through Yevamos. And I still remember him saying that if anybody finished the Masechta, we're going to do, I don't know if they still do. They still do the Baal Peh thing? No, they don't do it? Oh, you guys stink. All right, listen. He made a whole deal. Go to Rabbi Hartman. Ask him why he doesn't do this anymore. I know he's not your second Seder anymore, but just ask him why they don't do this. We learned Yevamos Baal Peh. We did the whole thing. I mean, Shach Levitario. From the beginning to the end. It was really hard. I started with the fifth parak, and then we went down from there. We ended up doing it. But I still remember. Yevamos has a special place. I still remember, like, the beginning. I can beat cab drivers now. I got one Mishnah, just like they have that one Mishnah that they can get you on, you know? Like, I can do that as well. I'll go ahead. I still remember my best cab driver. Oh, my gosh, this is the best guy. He, like, came up to me, and he's like, Mazel Yisrael. So I'm like, oh, gosh, don't talk to me. But he said, Mazel Yisrael. So I was like, ah. So he said, Yaakov, Yitzchak, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Avram, Leah. And I was like, you're a cab driver. That's pretty good, right? And then I asked him why he wasn't wearing a kippah. And he pointed to Shemayim and he said, my kippah is the top of my car. That's wrong. That's not how it works. I don't think that's how it works. I'm pretty sure that's not there. He then said to me, by the way, Mazeh Yad. Mazeh Yad. So I'm like, Right? But he didn't want that. He wanted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. 14 is the gematria of Yad. And I said, Yad and Yad is Kayach. Pretty good, right? That's all I learned from cab drivers. Anyway, that is that. Yeah, I'm pretty much done with that. So the question is, Gemara Yevamos Kukhov Aleph says that anybody who's thrown into a pit filled with snakes and scorpions can automatically say you're going to say that this guy is already dead. Because once you go in there, there's no way the guy's going to come out of it alive. Lions, you could survive. Anyway, but snakes and scorpions, you are not automatic. You are definitely going to die. So why did Yosef HaTzadik survive? Why don't we use Yosef HaTzadik as a proof that you don't die when you get thrown into a pit that's filled with snakes and scorpions? Clearly he didn't die. Why wouldn't this be a good riot? Why wouldn't that be considered a good proof? The answer is unbelievable. The Moshe Zakenim says, number one, it could be that that's only when you fall on them. But if you fall to the side, then it's not going to be there. If the pit was as wide as the Benish Chai says it is, then it won't be a problem. That's going to be an answer for that. The Chidah says you can use the Sefer Yashar up above that says that they went into the pit. They went to the holes of the pit a little bit earlier, so they wasn't able to fall on them, so you didn't have to worry about stuff like that. Torah Tamima says it was an absolute miracle. And had the Shlachim known it, they would have said, they should have bitten him, but they didn't bite him whatsoever. The Klei Chamda. You know how the Klei Chamda works? Klei Chamda is like going through like Ian, trying to be in the Ayin of the Sukkah. The honest truth is, it's very hard to read an entire Klei Chamda. I shake the hand of anybody who reads an entire Klei Chamda and says, I just finished a Klei Chamda. I will say to you, you are an awesome person, and I truly envy you. But I'm never going to do it. That's just not going to happen. So I skim through Klei Chamda. That's the honest truth. It's just very, very hard. The Klei Chamda says that normally you can be made about that person that he's going to die. Normally that's what ends up happening. It's possible that he did, but Yosef HaTzadik was different. He knew Kishuf. He knew magic. So he knew the lachashim that you can use to keep snakes away from you. If you know the lachash to keep snakes away from you, he was able to say it. He says it as a mistama. Mistama, you knew kishuf. Mistama, you knew the lachash. So he had no problem. You only are made on the guy if the guy doesn't know lachashim. If the guy knows lachashim, then you're not made about that guy. There is a dik in the Gemara Kuflav Aleph that seems to say it that way, and there's also Yerushalmi in the last Perek Yevamos that seems to say it that way as well. And the Kleichamt goes into that. But here gets into a big machlokas. You know the whole famous Parshas Drachim, the idea of the machlokas between the Shvatim, about the regular Shvatim and Yosef Tzedek, about what they were arguing about, that the Parshas Drachim says that the Shvatim were saying that we're really worried, I guess, we consider ourselves Bnei Yisrael. And Yosef Tzedek considered themselves Bnei Noach. You ever hear that machlokas before?
Yeah.
That all the machlokas are dealing with that, and the Abram and Achai, when you're dealing with Abram and Achai, that Yosef Tzedek felt that Abram and Achai would be usher to Bnei Noach. What they really were doing was they were shuchting the animals, and while the animal was still shaking, they were cutting off the ears and eating the ears. For a Jew, that's mutter. As soon as the animal is shechted, it's considered shechted. It's done. You can eat from the ears immediately. Not the ears. But either way, regardless, that's what you can do. What the Bnei Noach are not allowed to. Not until the animal stops moving. So there was a machlokus between the two. Are you allowed to eat from the ears? The Shvatim said, yes, we can, because we're Bnei Yisrael. Yosef said, no, we can't, because we're Bnei Noach. That machlokus goes all the way through. A Ben Noach is usher in Kishuf. A Ben Noach that does Kishuf is Chayav Nisa. If a Ben Noach does Kishuf and is Chayav Nisa, he can't save himself through Kishuf or Lachashim. A Yisrael can save himself through Kishuf or Lachashim from snakes. So a Ben Yisrael could do it. So the Shvatim would assume that he would be able to use the Lachashim to be able to stay away. But Yosef Tzedek Lishitasu didn't. So he should have died by the snakes, but he didn't, obviously, because of the other reasons that are mentioned. So why didn't they really buy him? So Chaim Palagi, I found this in Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein in Aleinu L'Shabbat. This is a really crazy story. Chaim Palagi told over a story about the Shevet Musar. The Shevet Musar used to get up really, really early, right, in order to go learn. So it was still dark outside, and it was pitch black, and there were no lights whatsoever. He was sleeping in his room, and he was sleeping in his bed, and while he was sleeping in his bed, he used to wake up immediately, and he would immediately wash Nagelbasser, then put on his clothes underneath the covers, and then he'd take his gartel from off the little table that was right next to him, put on the gartel, and then he'd run over to go learn. He'd run over to the next room, turn on the light, and he'd go learn. He'd start learning immediately. So, one morning, he does everything, washes the Nagelbasser, puts on his clothes, grabs the gartel, and the gartel feels a little bit weird. Puts it on, right, tucks it in, does everything, whatever he's supposed to do. You see where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah.
It's good. Those who don't worry. So now, he goes into the other room, and as he's going to the other room, and he sits down, all of a sudden he feels his belt fall off him completely. He's like, that's weird. So he looks down to go pick it up. Well, there's a light in this room, right? There's a light in here, and he realizes it's a poisonous snake. He had just wrapped a poisonous snake around his body as a gartel. I don't know if you know what a gartel's like. It's not an easy thing to put on. That's like amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I cannot imagine a snake being like, yeah, a little bit in. the scratch right there. But he did it. He turned everything around, tucked it in, right there, right out. And when he went out and sat down, the snake was like, all right, I'm out. And he ran away. The Shevet Musar was so crazy. He obviously was amazed that such a miracle had happened to him. He wrote a sefer on that miracle. It's called the Azor Eliyahu. Azor Eliyahu means the belt of Elijah. I don't know why Eliyahu, but the Azor is right there. Right? And he did that all based on what had happened with the snake itself. So the first thing I thought when I read this story is, what a spaced out. That's the first thing that I thought. That's an unbelievable shit. The fact that you think of a guy, like, I felt gartels before. I don't wear a gartel. And I know what gartels feel like, and it doesn't feel like snake skin. And somebody that picks up snake skin and tucks it in, that's awesome. That's like, that takes like, you know, there's like ADHD. This would be like 80 triple HD. I don't know what there would be. That's like hyper, absolute, I cannot pay attention to anything else. But something happened and he was able to do it, which is absolutely amazing. So Bitzin Zilberstein learned out a totally different lesson than I did. Right? He learns that the reason why he didn't bite him is because when somebody is so into Torah, snakes cannot bother you whatsoever. They have no ability to be able to bite you. The Gemara in Brachos, Daf Lamed Gimel with Rechinina Medosa, who happens to be my favorite Tana, by the way, the greatest Tana of all time, Rechinina Medosa. By far, my favorite Tana. He's awesome. He's got everything going for him. He can make houses big. He's awesome. He's absolutely awesome. So we all know that there was a snake. Come on, you know the famous one, right? The famous one with the light, with the oil. right? That his daughter ended up lighting with vinegar instead of oil, and she was crying in Erev Shabbos on the night of Shabbos. Rav Chanina Mendoza went up to her and said, "Biti, ma'ich batloch." I believe it's the only place in all of Shas where it says the word ma'ich batloch, and that's awesome. So either way, they said, "Well, what do you care? The same Hashem that makes the oil light can make the vinegar light." And the vinegar lit the whole day through for 24 hours, 25 hours until Shabbos is over, right? And once Shabbos is over, they use that to be able to make Abdullah. That's the Gemara Tanis and Dabchav Hayyam and Aleph. Unbelievable. You know why I love that Gemara so much? Because of Ramosha. Ramosha Feinstein says, the Pshat is, if you consider everything in life a miracle, then nothing else is really considered a bigger miracle. I mean, we look at these things and we turn on a light and all the lights go on and we're just like, yeah, that makes sense. It doesn't make any sense. Does that make sense? Well, because of electrons. Come on. You know how electrons work? And protons and neutrons? You're okay with that? You think that makes sense? You think that makes sense? Do you have any idea why oil lights and vinegar doesn't?
Well, yeah, because there is this oil.
Come on. Nobody here knows. You light oil candles on Hanukkah and it works. Nobody sits there and says to themselves, well, that doesn't make any sense, because we're fools and we don't think about these things. But if you would, you would realize it's a crazy miracle that anything works. How does anything work? I don't want to go all Victor Miller on you, because I could, right? But I don't want to go into the whole, like, look at the eye. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to, like, go crazy. I'm not going to say, like, an apple. But it is. It really is amazing. When you start looking at this stuff and you start realizing it, maybe it comes with age. And I'm older and smarter and wiser than all of you, so it's possible that, you know, that's where it comes from. And then after a while, right, it all comes through. It's only because of my age. It's not because I'm smarter. It's possible you guys are smarter than me. It's not really possible, but it is possible. But it's age. It's age that just trumps all. So, you know, what can you do, you know? You're looking up at your elder and your greater, so... Nothing to do, I'm so sorry. Anyway, so now, don't worry, you'll be able to do that to your kids at some point. That's why you have kids. So now, here's the idea, the concept, said Rav Moshe Feinstein, is exactly that. Rav Moshe Feinstein looked at it and said, if you consider everything a miracle, then what difference does it make if it's oil or vinegar? It makes no difference to you. I cannot have vinegar light for me. Because I look at oil and say, it makes sense. I look at vinegar and say, it doesn't make any sense. So vinegar would not light for me because I consider that a crazy miracle. And I'm not worthy of that miracle. But Rav Chanina Mendoza did not consider it a miracle. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu let it light. It didn't make a difference whatsoever. And that leads into a famous shaila of why Hanukkah was such a big deal if Rav Chanina Mendoza did it on a random Friday night. So it lasted for 8 nights instead of one. What's the difference? Who cares? It happened. If the Ner Maravi always stayed lit in the Beis Mikdash based on the Ramban and parts of Baloscha and Tark. Something Chav, probably Zion Chav, right? If it's right over there, right, then you'd wonder, you'd sit there and you'd say to yourself, well, why is that such a big miracle, Hanukkah? That's, again, I don't want answers, but it's a good question to be able to ask yourself. I have a share on that, but I gave it at Eish Gesher, so they're a little bit different from you guys. So now, let's go on. We're going to have the next point. They threw into the fit because of the idea. We danced with the Sefer Yashar. I think I've said most of this stuff. There's something over here. There's a Panach Raza and a tour. Right, okay. Okay, enemies Rafi. I forgot about this. All right, either way, regardless, all of them. So we've shown them all get into this whole idea that Reuven wanted to throw them into a different pit, and they threw them into that pit. Reuven said, throw them into this pit, because there wasn't supposed to be anything inside there, including snakes and scorpions. But they threw them into a pit that had snakes and scorpions on purpose in order to test them. Now, what does that mean in order to test them? The Zohar and the Alshich. I know those are two random mephorshim, but Rav Moshe Alshich says it straight out. The Zohar I saw quoted, so you can't trust me on this one. I'm not a Kabbalah guy. So the Zohar and the Alshich both say they wanted to test the Yosef was Chai Misa. They specifically threw him in to a pit that had snakes and scorpions inside it to see if the snakes and scorpions would bite him. That way, they wouldn't be Chai for anything and would be HaKadosh Baruch Hu that did it instead of them. Because we said by Rav Chanina Mendoza, I skipped Rav Chanina Mendoza's story. What's wrong with you guys? Rav Chanina Mendoza in Brachos, Lamed Gimel, was standing. He heard about an arod, a crazy snake that was biting people and killing them. So Rav Chanina Mendoza said, it's not the snake that kills, it's the chait that kills. If you have Chataim, then you'll be killed by the snake. If you don't have Chataim, then you won't be killed by the snake. Rechina Medosi, to prove it, took his shoe off, put his foot down right on top of the pit, and the snake came up, bit him, and Rechina Medosi took a step back and landed in water. Apparently, these types of snake bites, if you step in water before the snake does, you live. That's awesome. We don't have a snake like that nowadays, but it's possible that there was a snake that was like that, that ended up having that type of idea where you just stepped into water and it lives. But Rechina Medosi would tell everybody, it's Torah that saves you. That's what protects you, and your ability to stay away from chait, that's what allows everything to happen. Says the Al-Shech of the Zohar, they specifically threw him in to see what would happen. Does he have the schuyas to be able to survive like Rechina Medosi, or no? And when they saw that he survived, they were wondering, and that's why they decided to sell him instead of throwing him into a different different pit or doing something else with them, they decided to do that. The Kli Yakar says it as well. The Nachash is known for Lashon Hara because of its Lashon Hara on Adam and Chava, on HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Chava. You know that, right? Because the snake was the original Tsaras guy. He got Tsaras for the very first time. That's how it has scales. The scales come from its Tsaras. That's from the Yalkut Rubeni and Parshas Tezria. So that's where it gets its scales from, because of that. Originally, it had that real big skin. You know what happened to that skin eventually, right? Oh, that's a good question. What happened to the skin of the Nachash eventually? It became what? And then? Very good. And?
Joseph got it.
And?
Esav
got it. And?
Yaakov got it.
Yaakov got it. It was the Ksonis Possum, according to my job. I'm giving you that for that. That was pretty good. That's very impressive.
Touch it down. Touch it down.
That was good. All together. That is a measure that's brought down. That goes all the way through. Brings it all the way down to over there. So the algorithm, the way the Kli Yakar says it is, that was his punishment. Let's see if the snake is there. Now, I'm putting on the side as just brackets and parenthetically. The scorpion is a big issue. Why scorpions are mentioned over here? There is no mention of scorpions being involved with Lashon Hara. There is a great measure that I saw years ago that deals with scorpions. In fact, some of you might have read in Pesach, Reb Pesach Kron has a book in which there was a guy that saw a yellow scorpion in his house, and he went to Reb Sheinberg and he asked Reb Sheinberg what he should do. And Reb Sheinberg said, it's because you stopped giving tzedakah properly. When you stop giving tzedakah properly, then you're bitten by scorpions based on Perek Shira. That's crazy talk. I have no idea what that means. And it's true, the guy had just stopped giving money to a certain guy, and the guy ended up going through, I'm pretty sure it's Reb Pesach Kron's story, and he goes through the entire thing. I don't know what the Pshapian scorpions is. I know I have something in one of my notes somewhere and I can't find it. I have absolutely no idea, but I don't know that. We're going to stick to the snake itself and deal with that. We already mentioned Rechini Mendoza, so I'm not going to mention that. It's another idea. The Gemara Baruch Hu Samach Beis in the Beis says that if a person is sinua in the bathroom, he takes care of himself in the bathroom and is always as sinua as he possibly can be, meaning he keeps himself as dressed as possible when you go to the bathroom, then you will be saved from snakes and you will have better dreams. That's what it's doing over there in Baruch Hu Samach Beis, because of the dream part, right? So that's what it says. They had no idea if he was sinua or not. They had absolutely no idea because nobody saw him into the bathroom, so they had no idea whether he was. But they did know that he had crazy dreams. So they looked at him and said, well, listen, if we want to see if these dreams are being given by Malachim or by Shadim, then let's see if he's bitten by snakes. If the snakes are attacking him, then that means that the dreams were given by Shadim and he's not sinua in the bathroom. If the snakes are not attacking him, that means the dreams might be real, and then we have to decide what to do after that. And that's what they did by selling him down to Mitzrayim, worried what's going to be. Now, we already said that he judged them as a Navi Shaker. We talked about the Chassam Sofer before, and we said stuff like that. But listen to what they did in the first place. The Shulchan did not decide to kill him. But let's think. What's the punishment by a Navi Shaker? This is not going to get a book, but it should be known. What's the punishment by a Navi Shaker? Guy speaks in Nivu Shaker. What happens to the guy? Naskila. Not sorry about Chenek. You were up to four. Yeah, Chenek is 100% true. It ends up being Chenek. Okay, we got Chenek over here. Chenek means that. Now, we all know that in Beis Din, when Beis Din decides that it's going to be Chenek, they take a rope, wrap it around the guy's neck, and then one person pulls that way, one person pulls that way. That's how they strangulate the guy, okay? So that's what ends up happening. So we know that. That's already brought down. We do not take him by the gallows and, you know, take off his neck that way. We don't throw him inside water. But the Gemara does say that even though there's no Arba Mises anymore, the Din Dalet Mises still applies, and that Din Dalet Mises means that when a person drowns, it's possible that it was because of a Chiyuv Chenek. Now, it doesn't mean for sure, and don't say that about people that drown, but regardless, it's possible that that's the connection between those ideas. If that's true, says the Chassam Sofer, they came up with an idea. He's Chiyuv Chenek for being a Navi Sheker. Let's throw him in a pit that has water in it. He's Chiyuv Chenek. So we can't do Chenek because we don't have a real basin. What we'll do is we'll throw in a pit that has water in it and make him have Chenek. That'll be a strangulation. He'll die inside the water itself. That should be good enough. But they wanted their father to think that he was consumed by wild beasts. And that way, they would never have to answer any questions about what happened to Yosef Tzadik. They would push him into a pit, he would die by the water inside the pit, and then they'd take his clothing, and they were planning on afterward taking that body out of the pit, taking the clothes and all of everything else and leaving it in the middle of the field with blood all over it, so it would look like Yosef HaTzadik was eaten by animals. Somebody else would find it, not the Shvatim, and would eventually tell Yaakov, you know what ended up happening over here. They wouldn't have forensic DNA or forensic evidence to be able to figure out that he drowned and then he had been killed, right? They would think that it happened by wild animals. Reuven suggested the following. Don't throw him into that pit. throw him somewhere else into a pit that doesn't have water and allow the snakes and scorpions to do it. Now, snakes and scorpions is a different issue. There's srepha involved when a snake bites you. There's srepha involved. But what he thought was is that if you throw him into a pit filled with snakes and scorpions, they'll choke him to death by being all around him. Maybe it'd be constricting snakes. And it would be those types of things that would be able to kill him instead. Throw him in there instead. That was the problem. When they threw him in and he wasn't killed, Reuven ended up having them sell him down to Mitzrayim. He says, I'm sober. That was the shot behind it. There's a whole thing about Shatulin Yisrael and Malkum Zeb, and I'm not going to go into that. I'm going to skip a little bit around here to be able to get this down. Just want to say the very following. We don't understand what the Shvatim meant. Rav Shamshon Hirsch is of the opinion that you are allowed to knock down the Shvatim and the others. And if they say something that's wrong, you're allowed to say they did something that's wrong. I don't really ascribe to that Ashkafa. I kind of think that that's really hard to do and really hard to say that the Avos of the Shvatim did anything wrong, and the Torah is specifically saying it. I understand why Rav Hirsch is doing it. Rav Hirsch doesn't want anybody to deify the Avos and to say things that are sort of like against. I understand it, and I totally understand that there could be a derech that way. If somebody comes up to me and says, no, Avram Minu sinned, I totally understand it. The Ramban says that. They did five chasayim, I understand that. If somebody comes up to me and says, the Shvatim sinned by selling Yosef, I understand that. A lot of people will say, no, they sinned on their level. I totally understand that as well. I'm of the opinion that there was no chait whatsoever that they paskined it. I understand the people that say that they totally sinned and they did something that was really, really silly. I'm also of the opinion of the person that says that they sinned a little bit and that on their level was considered a great sin. I don't have a true, real... I have a derech. I just don't... I hear all the different drachim. I hear all the different sides when it comes to stuff like this. See, Rav Hirsch holds that way. But the truth is, I feel the Chassam Sofer says it the best way. They had a Pesach Halacha. Here's the Pesach Halacha. You guys are in Gittin, right? Do you get to Mar Ukva and Daf Zion? You got to Mar Ukva and Daf Zion? Okay, so Mar Ukva, we all know, had an issue with Geniva. Geniva is an interesting guy. He appears four times in Gemara Gittin. He's killed in one of the Gemaras, right? He's killed in a second one of the Gemaras. The other two, there's a bunch of people that are saying, hey, what's up with Geniva? Should we stand up for him? Should we not stand up for him? It's a really interesting person. Geniva, you'll see him. It's four times, possibly five, if you want to include the fifth. Samach Beis and Samach Hay, I feel, are too similar to be able to consider separate. But regardless, there's four or five times you're going to mention Geniva. Mar Ukva was really bothered by Geniva. Really bothered. And couldn't stand him. So he went to his Rebbe. His Rebbe was Rebbe Elazar ben Pattis, one of the poorest people in all of Shas. Rebbe Elazar ben Pattis, he went to Rebbe Elazar ben Pattis and says, can you daven for this man to die? Rebbe Elazar ben Pattis said, don't daven for the guy to die. Okay, don't worry for it. So Mar Ukva came back to him and said, it's really bothering me. I really want him to die. That's what he said about Geniva. And so what did Rebbe Elazar say to him? He said, listen, go to the Beis Medrash, Behin Kolon Eilam. All these issues will take care of themselves. You don't have to worry about anything. Mar Ukva went straight to the Beis Medrash, and Geniva was brought out to be killed. Unbelievable Gemara. What was the Svara behind Mar Ukva? Here's even greater. You know, the Halacha is, according to the Rambam, it's in Hilchos Chovul Amazik, Perek Ches, that by a Yachid, the Pshat is, a Yachid, a guy should go to the Beis Medrash, like Rebbe Elazar, and everything will be taken care of, but you are not allowed to daven for someone to die. But if it's a Rabin, if it's Sorkei Rabin, if you have one guy, let's say, of the whole town that's a Moser, and you know he's a Moser, and you know he's doing terrible things, the Tzibor is allowed to daven that this guy died, or being given over into the hands of the government. Sometimes that's the exact same thing. You hear that? Listen, we Paskin, like Rebbe Elazar, that a person should not daven for a person to die. Just go to the Beis Medrash, everything will be worked out, everything will be taken care of. That's how we paskin. We paskin like Rebbe Elazar. But we hold like Mar Ukva, when that's impossible and you're dealing with a tzibur, then you are allowed to daven for people to die. The Shvatim held like the Rambam. The Shvatim held they were a Rabin. They couldn't go to the Beis Medrash because a Rabin is not required to go to a Beis Medrash, and therefore they could daven for Yosef HaTzadik to die. That's what they held. They paskin even further. That not only can you daven for him to die, but you can mamish do something to have him be killed. And the Shvatim paskin that way, like the Rambam, which is a psak la'alacha, a real psak la'alacha. They paskin that way, and therefore damned him to death. The issue is that Yosef HaTzadik was a tremendous tzaddik, and they didn't realize his greatness. The same way that Yosef HaTzadik was able to fool them, it's really amazing. He fooled them into thinking that he was a non-Jewish king in a black kingdom. Everybody was African-American, they wouldn't have been American. Everybody there was African. Everybody in Egypt would have been there. And he looked like a Mediterranean guy. A Mediterranean guy who had gotten his way up there by translating dreams. Translating dreams. And he had a child, because his child was a translator, who knew Hebrew. You don't think anybody would be suspicious? It really is one of the most amazing things of the world. Shelton didn't look at him and be like, Yosef? And he's like, oh man, that's terrible. I know the Ramban with the mask, I realize. I understand that he put on a mask, a wolf mask. His hands are white. His hands are white. You don't think the Shlatan would have asked anybody, hey, where'd this guy come from? This guy, Sofnas Paneach. Oh, his real name is Yosef. And he came from some other land. He was a slave for a while. Bought by Potiphar. You don't think anybody would have asked any questions? It's one of the reasons why Yosef had said Miraglim at times, so that they wouldn't ask, because if you're spies, you wouldn't ask any questions. Okay, whatever. Regardless, there's a lot to that, and there's a lot to understand regarding that. But that's the concept, says the Chasam Sofer, that they paskin mamish like them. Aside from that, Nechunya Chofer Sichin. Do you know that guy? From Bava Kamma? No? Nechunya Chofer Sichin used to dig pits. His daughter fell into a pit. Right? Everybody knows Rechinina ben Joseph said, don't worry about it, don't worry about it, don't worry about it. The third time around he said, somebody already saved her. She was brought out of the pit. Okay, don't worry. No, we're skipping this Chasam Sofer right now. It's not going to be good there. Just know, Habor Rechim Bomayim is the Gematria of is the Rosh Yitzchak of Abraham. That's important. All right, anyway, that's the other Chasam Sofer. The Abir Yaakov. You know who the Abir Yaakov is? The Abir Yaakov, does anybody here know?
Yeah.
You know?
Grandfather of the Bava
Sali. Very good. Grandfather Bava Sali. The Bava Sali is actually named after the Abir Yaakov, but his father, Rabbeinu Masud, of Bava Sali's father, was so scared of his own father, he couldn't say his name. I don't know what he did when he read Chumash, but he couldn't say his name. So he couldn't name his kid Yaakov. He had to name him Yisrael. That's why the Bava Sali was named Rabbi Yisrael Abuchatzera. The Abir Yaakov was like the grandpappy of the family. He's the one that told over all the stories, Rabbi Shmuel, you know, the famous flying carpet story. There's a two-volume set on the Abir Yaakov and the Bava Sali. It's in English and in Hebrew. Get the English version. It's a two-volume set. It is the greatest, they are the greatest books of all time. You will never put it down. You'll be like, I can't believe this guy passed away in 1984. I was 5 when he died. I was around at the same time of a Makobel that you cannot understand. There's a guy in Chicago who owes his life to the Abir Yaakov. He still says his mother was here. His mother and father lived here at the time. You might know, he's Saul Davis. I don't know if you guys know him. Do you know him? Shmuel? Do you know him? So Yisrael Davis, he's named Yisrael after the Bava Sali. Apparently his father didn't have a problem saying the name, but he was named after the Bava Sali because his mother was, they said that the child was, unfortunately, had been dead in the womb, and they were going to do a surgery in order to remove the child. And he ran, I don't know if he called, I don't know what it was, but his father went to the Bava Sali, and the Bava Sali said, take this water, you're fine. And they went back, and there was nothing wrong, the baby was perfectly healthy and perfectly fine. I mean, if you know him, he's not perfectly fine, but like, he's good. He's pretty good. You know? I'm joking. He's a great guy. By the way, but that's the idea. It's an amazing, amazing idea. The Bava Sali lived in our times. We're not talking about a crazy person. Forget about it. Rav Ovadia Yosef was his own. He was a private Makobel. There's a lot of crazy stories about Rav Ovadia Yosef. There's stories with Rav Ovadia Yosef and the Bava Sali that boggle the mind. Boggle the mind. He lived. He was here. I saw Rav Kaduri. I got a bracha from Rav Kaduri during Birkas Kohanim, which made no sense at all, which was awesome. And he was speaking in Arabic. Sorry, they're just going in. I don't know what's up with that. But there are people that really know what they're doing, that really have it, that really have it. The Bava Sali was one of them. And his grandfather, the Abir Yaakov, was a scary dude. Scary. Absolutely scary. So again, if you can find that two-volume set, I got it from Rabina for free because he likes me. So I went, when I was at Netiv, he brought it to me. He says, do you like Abir Yaakov? I said, yeah. So he's like, yeah. And he gave it to me. It's the greatest. I'm telling you, I could not put it down whatsoever. It's the greatest farm. And then when I told him last time, I said, I really like the Abir Yaakov song. This is the reason why you gotta get close with all the different Rosh Yeshivas throughout everywhere, no matter what. Because like last time I came, I was like, yeah, that Abir Yaakov book you gave to me was unbelievable. He's like, okay, here. And he gave me another 5-volume set of the Abir Yaakov Al HaTorah. Awesome. It's awesome. It's crazy stuff. It's crazy stuff. And it's like Sparti Torah. Sparti Torah is awesome Torah. That's what it equals to. There's no difference between Sparti Torah and awesome Torah. It's all the same. The Abir Yaakov says the whole thing is a remez to what happened with Potiphar later on. We all know that Potiphar became a Sris. Why did Potiphar become a Sris? Because he wanted to be together with Yosef HaTzadik, right? Achaz Potiphar also wanted to be together with Yosef HaTzadik. They both wanted to be. Bor, written Beis Vav Resh, in masculine, refers to Potiphar. Habora, meaning hey, beis, resh, hey, which refers to the pig in feminine form, is referring to Achaz Potiphar. This was a remez that in the future, he was going to be taken by Potiphar and Achaz Potiphar. And both of them were going to try to do something, and he would have to survive both of those issues. The boar was Reik Ein Bo Mayim. the boar, Potiphar, was emptied out. Ein bo mayim, that there was nothing left inside him, so that he couldn't be together with Yosef HaTzadik because he was castrated. That's habor reik ein bo mayim. Habora, the female, was still going to be a problem. You're going to have an issue with that. That's the Abir Yaakov's remez, is what was going on. It was a hint to Yosef HaTzadik in the future of what was going to be happening. And the final shot we're going to say is from the Gra. Gra says the whole thing refers to not lacking in Torah. Maybe you've talked to a person before that doesn't have any idea what Torah is. Maybe you've seen a person like that before. When a person has no Torah, memela, he's filled with snakes and scorpions. His mind doesn't work the same way. Habor reik, if the boar is reik and ein bo mayim, that means he has nechashim da'akravim inside. Torah allows for you to be able to think clearly, for you to be able to say the right things, to be able to get to the right direction. But without it, you end up being just filled with snakes and scorpions. Everything inside your head, not being able to understand what it is. You want to be a better person? You should sit there. And I do this with a lot of my guys, and it's difficult because when you're in America, it's not the same as being in Eretz Yisrael. It just isn't. Once you're in that mode of like, I'm already out of Eretz Yisrael, it's difficult to be able to inspire yourself and get yourself there. You have to have kabbalas. You have to take upon yourself certain things that you will never do no matter what. And that usually works. Even still, listen, it's hard. It's really, really hard. I have my kabbalas. I still have them. I've still been strong in them. Nonetheless, it's difficult how to be able to survive when you get out there. I tell guys all the time, if you go through a Seder and you're not a better person after Seder is over, you missed something. You missed something. Because if the whole point of Seder is just to sit and learn a certain text, that can't be it. It's got to be deeper than that. It's got to be to the point where the Torah is making a positive improvement in you. If you come out of Seder and you immediately scream at a guy, or you immediately budge somebody in line for lunch. I know, new cook, right? So Rashi was like going crazy about it. You just know. You're like, we have a new cook. I'm like, that's great. Really exciting. Very proud of you guys. Good. Maybe you won't get those little hot dog fake thingies with the little thing around it. Really. It used to be called Franks and Blanks, but here it's more like sushi and tofu and something. It's not even bread. Either way, regardless, I don't know what's going to be. But the idea is, if you sit there and you say to yourself, there's something that I need to do, and you work on yourself, and you say after the Seder's over, you hold yourself back from doing something. You're not going straight to something that you know you shouldn't do. And I know it's different here, but not going straight to your phone after Seder is over to go see what you might have missed, a text or a phone call, or I know you're not allowed to have those, so right of the phone. Nothing else for you to have. Instead of going to that, instead of saying to yourself, what's for lunch? It should be a thought of, think for 1 second, just stay there for an extra second. Be able to say to yourself, did I get anything out of today? Am I a better person for what I am, for what I did over this past day? It's got to be that way. You're going to come to a time, not everybody, hopefully many of you will be able to learn for the rest of your lives, have it work out. I haven't been Zocha. I teach. That definitely is not learning, but you're going to get to a point in your lives where you are going to have to appreciate the half hour, the hour and a half, whatever you got, to appreciate that time and know that you cannot bottle during it. You're going to come to that point, because otherwise you're just going to leave out with nothing. You could be that guy. You could be that guy that is so into TVs and movies that, like, when you sit by the water cooler, you're getting a coffee, somebody's like, hey, do you see that TV show? And you're like, yeah. Yeah, that was me. Did you hear about the Golden State Warriors? Yeah, I saw like every play. You could be that guy. I call that guy a geek. Some people call that guy really cool and wins all the intramural leagues. Not intramural leagues, what's that word? Fantasy leagues. Let me tell you, I call that guy a real geek. When you get into arguments about who the best running back in the NFL is, you're a geek. Okay? For those guys in London, if you get into arguments about who the best forward is, then you're a geek. It's just going to happen. Not that I consider soccer a sport, but neither, nonetheless, the ideas behind it, I know. I said that line earlier today, that soccer is not a sport. And three guys, momish, got up and walked out. I was like, I am not intimidated. 5 minutes later, they came back and I said, stay out! Worked out really, really well. It's good times. My kids are trying to convince me that it is. I don't believe them. Anyway, so let's go through what we did today. What we did is we mentioned the purpose of why the Shluchim did what they did. We mentioned that Chasam Sofer. We went through the depth of the pit. We went through if it's less than 10 Shluchim, if it's 20 Amos, and the ideas behind why, how that didn't hurt them with Hevel, and then the grave of Shnurmbos. That was awesome. Then we gave the Ramazan as to how this is so. I didn't know there were snakes and scorpions in there. Went through the Sefer Yasher, went through a bunch of Rishonim, the Gemara Nevamis. How does that answer up with all these all together? Went through a piece of Zilberstein with the whole snake belt thing, which is the story that you should remember for the rest of your life. The Rishonim about how they ended up going into the wrong pit, the Alshach and the Zohar about what they were trying to do, the Kliyakar we went through, we skipped those, we skipped that. Then we went to the Chasam Sofer about the Navi Shekhar and throwing him into a pit that was filled with water or into a pit that was going to smother him completely. We mentioned the Refersh, we mentioned the Chasam Sofer about their Svara based on Mar Ukva and Gemara Gittin Daf Zion. We mentioned the Chasam Sofer about Rock Habore Gimbal Mind, but I didn't tell you guys that was Rosh Hashanah Zohar, and it's an awesome one. And then I mentioned the Avir Yaakov and the Gruah. Okay? That's what we did so far. So here we go. If you can tell me, for our last favor over here, if you're able to tell me the name of the Bubba Sali's father, you get this favor.
Sali.
I did mention it. You just have to check the tape. No. Wait, what's that? That's right. All right.
The one deal with this paper is, and I got it from the receiver, it's 100% true. I am not selling this paper for a reason. I'm trying not to, I don't do this stuff. I'm not.